the dangers of Me Too marketing, and how to find your own voice. So the big question is, how are entrepreneurs like us who have too much to do and too little time able to build both the business and the life of our dreams? That's the question. And on this podcast, we'll explore the journey to the answer. My name is Brett Ingram, entrepreneur and award-winning product creator. I chose to build a business and have a time for a personal life, and I want to help you do the same. Welcome to Optimize. So when we talk about Me Too marketing, what we mean is quite simply looking at some other company or some other business or some other individual or influencer or whatever, seeing what they're doing and basically copying it. Now, there's generally a benefit in learning from what other people do. At the same time, there's a danger when it comes to trying to duplicate exactly what somebody else is going to do. So if we look at other people and we use that as a model, and maybe we use the things that apply to us, or maybe we do, then there could be value in that. But the reason it's really popular, but it's also really dangerous, is because when people focus on Me Too marketing, what they figure is, listen, I'm going to shortcut what I need to do to figure out how to market this. If there's somebody already out there and they're doing it successfully, then why not just copy that? It sure beats needing to reinvent the wheel or starting from scratch and figuring it all out on my own, which makes a lot of logical sense, which is also why modeling that kind of stuff makes a lot of sense also. It's smart to be aware of what's working. It's smart to be aware of what seems to resonate with certain markets and take the elements of it that apply to ourselves and use that. At the same time, where it becomes risky is when we get either lazy or just complacent or comfortable with the idea that so-and-so is using this particular marketing strategy, so we're just going to do the same thing. And the reason that's really risky and dangerous is because what ends up happening is we become too generic. We become just a copy of what somebody else has already done. So it isn't our authentic audience. It isn't really our authentic voice or anything else. And so the danger in that is we can become generic or like fake. And if we're generic or we're fake, those are both problems in terms of marketing and in terms of developing our own brand, our own image, and our own tribe. The fact is, when we pretend to be something that we're not and pretend to be someone we're not, there's mental overhead associated with that. It becomes exhausting because we're trying to keep up an air or a facade of something that isn't real. And the longer we have to do that, initially it might work and it might pay off and we might make money and feel good about it, but it will become exhausting. And we see that in social media today, where people are getting to a point where, you know, they're having real sort of mental health issues because of the fact that their persona is what people are in love with, not them. And that's a really dangerous place to be. But in addition to that, there's a real pure dollars and cents risk with this. And the best example that I can give is, let's pretend for a minute that we were in the sort of dog training industry, right? And so we wanted to be a marketer for dog training. And we decide we're going to go with the shotgun approach. Okay, we're going to do dog training for everybody, right? It's the best dog training that's ever been created. And it's applicable to everybody who's ever owned a dog or ever wants to own a dog. The problem is, it may even work initially. But what ends up happening is somebody comes in and says, you know what? We've got the best poodle training available. Our training is specific to people who own poodles. Poodles have their own unique sort of issues that are different than other dogs, and we're going to show you specifically how to train poodles. This is why. We've owned poodles for 20 years. We have all the poodle experts in the world on our panel, like blah, 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 blah. Then that takes a little bit of your business, because if somebody is taking a look at that and looking for training and they own a poodle, are they going to buy the dog training 101 or poodle training, expert poodle training? They're going to go with the poodle training because it's more specific to them, targets them specifically. So then somebody comes out and they say, you know what? We're going to make training for bulldogs. We're going to make training for the non. And so you see what ends up happening is you get carved up because the niches all get carved up by specialty people. And so when you're stuck in the middle as the jack of all trades and, oh, we can do everything for everybody, you end up doing nothing for nobody because specialists come in and take everything. The idea is exactly the same when it comes to our own marketing strategy in terms of our own brand, our image, our voice, and everything else. If we are too generic or if we are too copycat of somebody else, the problem is we don't do it enough to stand out. And so while we might even get short-term benefit, it won't last because somebody else is going to come in and take that over. So in today's age of noise, of over-curated content, of AI, and image-first type marketing and social media, the easiest way to actually stand out is to be real. The irony is, because there's so much out there that's already curated and already overproduced, the irony is all we have to do is be ourselves to be unique. So instead of trying to compete with phony, we need to lean into who we are and share our own message and voice. So let's talk about six ways to do exactly that, because I think this is vitally important in today's day and age. The first is to learn or understand what makes us unique. There's something about each one of us, and this is one of the wonderful things about the human condition, is that we all have strengths and weaknesses. We're all better and worse at different things, but we all have unique attributes and unique qualities and everything else as well. Growing up, one of the interesting things is I always hated my voice, because when I was a little boy, even very small and just starting to talk, my voice was always really deep and it always really stood out. So in schoolrooms and in classes, I would be whispering with friends in the back of the room and the teacher's back would be turned and they'd say, "Brett, stop talking." They could pick out my voice among everybody else's because it was so unique. They could tell it was so deep. When we were young, maybe, I don't know, 10 or maybe 11 years old, some friends and I in the neighborhood decided that we were going to start a bee's nest killing business. And we were going to go around the houses in the neighborhood knocking down bee's nests for them. And we wanted to put an ad in the paper for this. So one of my friends called the newspaper, tried to put in an ad, and the person on the editorial line said, "You need to be 18 to put in an ad. I'm sorry." Because he could tell right away that my friend was a kid. So we waited a couple of days and then I called back and they said, "Okay, sir, how would you like to pay for this?" They were ready to take the ad because my voice was so deep, young, that they believed that I was an adult. And I actually had to take speech lessons, not because I couldn't speak, but because doctors told me at a young age when I had lots of tests done on me to see what was going on, and they thought I would lose my voice. They said, if you don't raise the octave of your voice, you will actually lose your voice and will no longer be able to talk by the time you're a teenager or in your early 20s. And so I literally had speech lessons to raise the level of my voice, the octave of my voice, and the pitch of my voice. And I had a chart that I had at home on the refrigerator. And if I talked from another room that was straining my voice, I got a red X. If I raised my voice, I got a red X. I had all these things that were good and bad behaviors, and it was charted every week. After about a year and a half of this, everybody just gave up on it and just let it go. Here I am 40 plus years later, and my voice is still here. The point I'm getting at with all this is that the very thing that when I was really young, I didn't like, and the very thing that I wished I could change about myself, my voice, is now one of the things that I love. Because it's one of the things that makes me unique. There's nobody else in the world that has the same voice that I do. And it's something that's always stood out. And it's funny because it depends on how we look at things and it depends on what our frame of reference is. Because as I got older, I had people say things to me like, "Can you sing?" And by the way, no, I can't. Tone deaf, worst singer in the world. But, you know, they said, "Oh, you'd make a great singer," because they really liked my voice. And I thought that was really flattering. I had a lot of people compliment me on it as I got older. And I noticed that more than I noticed the insults or more than I noticed standing out in a negative way. And it became something that I actually now like about myself. And that's the point. Whoever we are, we need to lean into that. We need to understand what makes us unique and not run from it, but embrace it. Who wants to be just like everybody else? What value is there in that? Let them be them. Let us be us. And so find what makes us unique and lean into that. Be who we are, make us and be unique and be authentic. And when we do that, what ends up happening is it resonates with people and it draws the right people to us. People who don't like us, and there always will be some, that's fine. But there are some extremely popular podcasters, social media, that I can't stand. And that's fine. They have a huge following. They don't need me. I'm not their audience. And so it works, right? And I'm sure vice versa. So understand what makes us unique and embrace that is one really big thing. The second thing, of course, is engage with our audience. Talk to people. Engage with them. Ask them questions. Learn from them. And be part of the conversation. You know, the only way that we get to understand what our market wants, whether we're selling products or services or selling ourselves or as influencers or whatever we're trying to do, is to engage with our audience. When we do that, we develop a relationship, and that relationship is the thing that endures. That's the thing that ultimately people come back to again and again because they value that time together. When we have a friend that we really enjoy spending time with, we can't wait to be able to get together with them again. And when we have somebody that maybe we don't know them personally, but we like their content, we're excited to tune in. My son, when I drive him to school in the morning, he would listen to this history. I think it's a YouTube channel, but it's also a podcast. So I guess it's like a video podcast. I don't remember the name of it, but it has this catchy little jingle in the beginning. And they tell these historical tales, and the speaker is very engaging. He's good. And it's super entertaining, and it teaches you deeper dives on little elements of history, like famous people and things like that, and stories about them that maybe we didn't know. It's incredibly engaging, and it's content that you can't wait to listen to, and I enjoy it. I like it when he puts it on, because I listen to it too. And it was the same thing with the chess person that he listened to. I forget the guy's name, Levi or Levy or something. He's a guy, I think he's from New York and he's a YouTuber. The guy's fascinating to me. He can take a topic like chess and make it fascinating. Chess is boring. I even like chess and it's boring. Who can make a YouTube channel and shoot videos about it every day? And have people, but he's funny, he's engaging, he's sincere. And when you listen to him, you're like, wow, and you feel part of it. And he engages the audience, and that's awesome. Good for him. I'm glad he's popular. He deserves it. His channel's awesome. So the thing about it is, if we engage with our audience, that is how, when we're unique and we are ourselves and we engage with our audience, that is a lot of the battle right there. Another thing, a third thing that we can do, though, is we can experiment. We can innovate. But one of the challenges that I see and one of the stumbling blocks that I see when I run into people that are starting a channel or starting a podcast or trying to do social media is they're terrified about putting anything out to the world because they want to make it so perfect. And look, it's admirable to want to make content that's really good and have your stuff be good and stand out. I understand that. But part of the process, part of the iterative process of getting good at what we do is doing it. I shudder to think, if I look back to my early podcast episodes, how dry and boring they were, because I'm sure I was nervous. I was stiff. I probably read stuff off a teleprompter. I wasn't comfortable enough to just get on there. And then I eventually just said, you know what? I'm just going to do this, because if I don't, I'll never get comfortable. And it reminds me, when I was in high school and college, I was a track and field guy, and I was a javelin thrower. And I'll never forget the first day that I learned to throw a javelin. I was actually a sophomore in high school. I had started as a freshman as a sprinter, but there were guys that were faster than me. And my coach realized in me that I had to build more of a thrower than a runner. And he said to me, come with me. And we were walking over, and I didn't know where he was taking me, but he basically realized I was never going to amount to anything trying to be a sprinter. So he brought me over to the throwing coach and he said, work with him and learn how to do it. And I'll never forget this because the first day that I learned to pick up the javelin and throw it, which you don't throw it your first day because it's technical and there's a ton of technique involved. But the first day that I was learning it, the girls had a home meet and they were going against South Windsor. And so there were all these high school girls from my high school there and all these high school girls from South Windsor there. And here I am, the kid who doesn't know how to throw the javelin. First of all, nobody probably even saw me, so it wouldn't even matter. But that's how we feel, especially when we're young. Every eye is on us when nobody probably gave me a second thought. But irrespective of that, I started to throw it. And I thought in my mind, I went through my own inner dialogue and I said, or inner monologue, and I said to myself, maybe I should just wait till tomorrow because there won't be a meet here. I'll have more privacy. I can learn to throw and it won't be as embarrassing. And then my own self, and I'm proud of myself for this, said, no, if I wait another day, that's one day longer, it's going to take me to get better at this. I'm going to just do it. And the faster I just do it, I'm going to get better at it. And by the end of my junior year, I qualified for states. I was the best thrower on the team, and I won most of my meets. I never would have got there if I was afraid to try. And so the fact of the matter is we have to experiment. We have to innovate. And the only way we could do that is by trying stuff. If you have a podcast or a social media or a marketing message, try stuff. Break and fix. If it doesn't work, try something else. If it doesn't work, try something else. If it does work, try more of that. Lean in, keep doing it. That's the only way that we get better. That's how we learn how to do stuff. The fourth thing that we could do is tell authentic stories. I've told two or three right on this episode, stuff I've never shared publicly before. But because the fact of the matter is, that's what people care about. When you care about someone, when you're invested in the content, the reason that television shows and movies like are successful and what separates them is character. It's not the story. The story can be done 100 different ways. There are a lot of great stories the movies were abysmal failures. It's when we connect and relate to the characters that it becomes something greater than what it was. Science fiction and horror tend to be movies that are difficult to make very popular only because the content is the content. Aliens, the second Alien, is one of the best science fiction horror movies ever made. And the reason for it is because you actually care about the characters, their dialogue, their interaction. They seem real and you root for them. You don't want them to get killed by the alien. So when they're dying off, spoiler, sorry, you feel terrible because you actually care. Star Wars, the original Star Wars and Empire Strikes Back, what made them amazing? Yes, the special effects and there were lots of special effects in all the new ones. They weren't nearly as successful. They wouldn't have created the cult following that the early ones did. Their success was based on the fact that everybody wanted to go because of the originals. And that is because they're character-driven stories. So tell authentic stories, be you, share what you know. AI can never do that because it doesn't have a history. It doesn't have any authentic stories. The fourth thing we could do is be consistent. Or maybe it's the fifth, I forget, I lost count. Be consistent. We want to continue to share that message. And while we're going to try different things, in general, we want to share a consistent tone, consistent message, and be who we are consistently. And the fifth thing that we can do is leverage trends. While we don't want to follow trends, if we're aware of what's going on, it's very powerful to be able to lean into a trend and apply it to what we do. So we don't have to agree or disagree with it, but we can reference it to generate or to get extra sort of marketing juice from the fact that it's a trending topic. And so we can weigh in on it ourselves. And that in and of itself will generate some extra traffic and some extra publicity for whatever it is that we're doing. If we follow those things, we have a really good chance to be able to create a very unique, sort of marketing message without being stuck in the Me Too sort of movement here in terms of from a marketing perspective. So the takeaway here is that oftentimes marketing is seen as a mysterious black box that's hard to understand unless we're experts. But the reality is we need to just keep it simple and not overcomplicate things. It's not rocket science. What we want to do is attract people that resonate with us, with our beliefs and our message, and our products and services. And the easy way to do that is to be ourselves, be authentic, and be real. And we'll find the right people, and they'll find us when our marketing starts with that. Be sure to subscribe so you get every episode and share it with a friend. And until next time, remember, no matter what you want from your business and your life, don't compromise, optimize.